response to Brother Padfield's second affirmative speech. He talks about how that he cited examples of saints helping saints, and he said if he could find another example, he'd cite it. I have already answered that. I've already discussed that. That's why I asked him a while ago, where is the example of Matthew 18, 15 through 20 in the New Testament? It's not there. Are you trying to say we're only authorized to do things by example? That's why I had my chart 6. He knows better than to commit himself to that. When he makes statements like that, it's as though he's saying, we've got to find an example of brethren helping non-saints or we can't do it. He knows better than that. That's why I anticipated that by that question about Matthew 18, 15 through 20. You don't have an example of that ever being practiced. But the brethren had to do it. And so it does not bother me when he finds examples of saints helping saints. That's a part of the pattern too. It's just not the exclusive pattern. It's not the whole story. He's leaving out part of the story. The Bible authorizes by direct statement, proved example, and by implication. If you think you can find the example of that in the New Testament, Matthew 18, 20 following, bring it up, Brother Padfield. 1 Timothy 5, 3 through 8, honor widows that are really widows. We're going to get into some charts on that just shortly here. He seems to be thinking that the word honor there necessitates the view that the person who is honored is a Christian. That was his discussion about that context. That's just false. That's just more information that has no substantiation. Well, if you honor somebody, you venerate them, and in this context, it's got to be a Christian. Prove it. Prove it to me. Don't just say it, assert it. Romans 13, 7, you've got the form of the same word where we are to honor the king. Or honor, it says honor to whom honor. That's what it says. Custom to whom custom, tribute to him tribute, honor to whom honor. Whoever it is worthy of honor. And in 1 Timothy 2, verse 17, Paul says, now look at this. The same basic word, honor all men. Now don't let him fool you by saying there's something awfully special about that word in 1 Timothy 5 that warrants the conclusion this person to be honored must be a Christian. It's not there. Now let him wrestle with that. He quotes me in my debate with Jack Holt, and I agree with what I said. He says this woman is a Christian. But Jack Holt didn't prove it, and he hadn't proved it either. Now on this word hope, he gives us a chart, and he gives us several passages where the word hope is used. I know in passages like Romans 8, 24 and 25, for in hope were we saved. Hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopeth for that which he seeth? But if we hope for that which we see not, then do with patience wait for it. I know there are plenty of passages where hope has reference to salvation of the soul. Now he might want to think about those passages that have reference to the salvation of the soul. Well, this widow over here in 1 Timothy 5 has got hope. Hope set on God. So therefore I know she's a Christian. No, you don't. Because you can have hope set on God and not be a Christian. You can have hope for deliverance in the circumstances that have nothing to do with the salvation of the soul, but the salvation of the body. I wish you'd think about that. Acts 27, 20, on the ship on the way to Rome, Paul said we got to the point where all hope that we would be saved was lost. That wasn't referring to salvation. That was deliverance from the storm. Why can't this widow over here, Christian or not, have hope in God that somehow, some way, in the providence of God, there will be deliverance from her predicament? She's a widow indeed. That doesn't mean she's a Christian. Philippians 2:19, Paul says, I hope in the Lord to send Timothy unto you shortly. That is, I hope, if it's in harmony with the Lord's will. Why can't a non-saint woman who's desperate hope to be delivered by God's providence if it's God's will? There are some persons who know that God exists who are not members of the church, who haven't got all the plan of salvation figured out, but who get in desperate situations and want God's help. And so that's enough on that. He goes to his commentary from Robert Bratcher on the widow, 1 Timothy 5. Well, in that discussion, I don't have a whole lot to say about his quotation from him, particularly. He had a passing remark to the fact that he said Bratcher referred to Christian work. We said he talks about that as being a misnomer, you know, though he still hasn't denied being a gospel preacher. Don't forget that. If I can call the church the Christian church, he can call himself a gospel preacher. He's going to keep on calling himself a gospel preacher. By the same token, we can refer to the Christian church. But that hasn't pleased him yet. He says, the pleasure-seeking widow, can she? My question is, can she ever be helped? He tries to leave the impression that I just am saying we just help anybody under any conceivable circumstance when I've never said that. But I get the very definite impression he cuts people out of help when they are deserving. What if the pleasure-seeking widow got into an emergency situation like the victim in Luke 10? He says, I don't care if she's struck down by a car out front in front of the building, the church can't help her. I deny that. I say that's a contradiction to everything the Lord ever taught about mercy. Now, that's his view. But the context is not discussing all conceivable circumstances. But can a pleasure-seeking widow be victimized? Can a non-saint be victimized? Oh, yes. Not only the Christians that get victimized. To him, it's like it's inconceivable that the church could ever be called upon to help somebody almost just in sin. The whole world is dead, he says. So he counts out the whole world. But the world can be victimized, brethren, and become deserving, needy people while they're in their sins. And let's not forget that Jesus died for sinners. She is dead. That describes every person in the world. So he's going to count out the world. The we and us of Galatians 6, 9, and 10. We and us. What about 6:6? By the way, what about 6:6? Do you get your pay from individuals or from the church? Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. Who pays your salary? I don't answer. Do you get a check from every individual in the Zion church? Does the church pay you? Let him, singular, let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. So Paul's we got the we and the us. Who's that? I'll tell you who it is. It's the churches of Galatia. As I gave order to the churches of Galatia. Galatians 1:2, he's writing to the churches of Galatia. Don't allow him to restrict that and say, individual only. That context doesn't say that. And as I gave order in the churches of Galatia, so also do ye. And by the way, in 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2, that's the only time there's a reference to the word there for treasury that says it's attached to the local congregation. And Paul says, what I told Galatia to do, the churches of Galatia to do, I'm telling the church at Corinth to do. And so you come back to the Galatian letter. He has talked to the churches of Galatia. So the churches of Galatia have treasuries. And in Galatians 6:10, the good to be done to all men, especially those of the household of the faith, can include their treasury in the various congregations of Galatia. Now think about it, brethren. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 and 2. You've got the word, the Greek word there, for out of which comes our word treasury, and this is the only passage in the New Testament that attaches it to a local congregation. And so as I said to the church of Galatia, Corinth, you do the same thing. We go to the Galatian letter where Paul had said something about the treasury, and lo and behold, in 6:10, let's do good to all men, especially toward them of the household of faith, and that includes the treasuries of the local churches of Galatia. Now let him answer that. Let him deal with that. Silence doesn't authorize. I've discussed silence. Silence does not allow you to make up laws for God either. We can't help non-saints. That's his fictitious. Silence says you don't make up laws for God. The scriptures say don't make up laws for God. God has not been silent about making up laws for him. 1 Timothy 4, 1 through 4. In fact, in that context, it's a very serious matter. It's referred to as the doctrine of demons. Making up laws where God has made none. It's a very serious thing. Limited music. We've talked about limited music. Limited benevolence. Yes, but he's got a limited pattern that's restrictive when he ought to consider the whole pattern. Now, chart 843, Glenn. Church or individual? Brethren, has he given us the principle yet? Where we can say, it's got to be the individual. It can't be the church. Look at these passages. 2 John 9. Whosoever goeth home and abideth not in the teaching of Christ hath not God. Does that refer to the individual only? Can David Padfield preach that to the church only? Can David Padfield preach that to an individual somewhere and to the whole church gathered together? He knows the answer to that. 2 Timothy 3, 16-17, all scriptures inspired of God and is profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete. Is that applicable to individuals only? Church only? Both? What's his principle? Colossians 3:17, whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Individual only, church only, both, H 44. Look at these passages, look at the bottom of that. All passages which authorize the performance of an act based upon the peculiar grounds of one's being a Christian are passages which apply with equal force both to church and individuals. Look at this chart. Who can do the teaching in Matthew 28:19? Individuals only? Can this church do teaching? Individual only. Church only. Both. He knows the answer. What about the baptism? Can individuals do it? Can the church do it? Can we all do it? Matthew 28:19. What about building a baptistry? What about an individual? Can he do it? Can the church do it? Can all of us do it? What about praying? Acts 3:42. Restricted individuals? Restricted to the church? Can we all do it? Individually and collectively. Singing. He brought up singing. Speaking one to another. He's going to apply that to the church. Speaking one to another in psalms, hymns, spiritual songs. Individuals only? Church only? Both. 1 Corinthians 16:1-2. Contribute on the first day of the week. Individual only? He says, now individuals only contribute. Can he say, church, congregation, let's all give? Can he do that? Acts 27, the Lord's Supper, who takes it? Individuals only? Does the church partake of the Lord's Supper? Must we partake of the Lord's Supper? Church support, preacher support, individual only? Does the church have a right to pay the preacher? Galatians 6:6. Galatians 6:10, do good unto all men, especially those of the household of faith. Individual only? Church only? Both? James 1:27, visit the father that's in widows near afflictions. Keep oneself unspotted from the world. He wants to say, that's for the individual only, not the church. Now let that ring in your ears, please. Next chart, 45. Acts 20:35, help the weak. Remember the words of the Lord Jesus. He himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. In all things I gave you an example, that so laboring you ought to help the weak. Individual only, church only, both. Galatians 6:1, restore this man. The man that's overtaken in the fault. Ye who are spiritual, restore such a one. There's a pronoun, ye, plural. Ye, that's the context of Galatians 6:10. Galatians 6:2, ye who are spiritual. I guess that's that faithful element he was talking about, of Sardis, Revelation 3. Ye who are spiritual, restore such a one. Individual only, church only, all of us. James 1:5, praying for wisdom. Individual only, church only, both. James 5:19, restoring the erring brother. And you know that's both, not just individual only, church only. Chart 50. James 1:27, 1 Timothy 5:16. Pure religion and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their afflictions and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Brethren, if visiting the fatherless and the widows is exclusively individual, if visiting the orphans, the fatherless, look at the top part of that chart. If taking care of the orphans is individual only, so is taking care of the widows in that passage, individual only. But you heard him tonight. Go to 1 Timothy 5, where he said the church has responsibility to some widows. Let it ring in your ears. He says, no. James 1:27 is individual only. Well, if the first part of the first part is visiting the orphans, then the second part of the first part is visiting the widows. But he said tonight in 1 Timothy 5, there is a widow over there, the widow indeed, whom the church must take care of. That means when I come back to James 1:27, I see that passage is not exclusively individual. Please, please think about that. And I hope David Padfield, in all honesty, will think about that. 22. 1 Timothy 5:8, if any provideth not for his own. The any of verse 18 is a Christian distinguished from an unbeliever. Don't let him tell you where the Christians are in that context. You pick up the words. You read through the context. See when it says, any woman that believeth, if anyone hath a widow, you see where the believers are, where the unbelievers aren't, or and where they are. Don't just let him decide for you. The word hope means it, you see. She's desolate. She's got hope. He said she trusts. You read where the believers are in that passage. The any of verse 18 is a Christian distinguished from unbelievers. Verse 8, look at verse 8. But if any provideth not for his own, he's denied the faith. All right, there's a Christian. He must take care of his own, especially his own household. Nothing is said about the necessity of his own or his own household being Christians. You know it's not there. Now, what if he can, due to accident or disease or death, no longer help them? His own household becomes desolate, including his widow and small children. Question, would the church be authorized to help the household? Next chart, 23a. Verse 16. Look at verse 16. We've got, if any woman that believeth. Now, there's a Christian. Any woman that believeth hath widows. But those widows aren't necessarily Christians. Verse 16, widows includes older widows Christians, older widows non-Christians. It includes younger widows Christians who have not married and younger widows who are non-Christians. 23b. The Christian woman who hath widows, let her relieve them. This includes older widows who are Christians, older widows who are not Christians, younger widows, Christians who have not remarried, and younger widows, non-Christians who have not remarried. 23c. The woman that hath widows. Note, this Christian woman has widows in her family. Example, her sister is a widow. Consider, if this widow has children or grandchildren, they should provide. Verse 4 so says. It doesn't say they have to be Christians to provide for the widows in their family. But then, if she does not, or they will not, take care of her, the Christian woman assumes responsibility for her sister. Now, what if this Christian woman who hath widows dies? Do the widows she has been relieving become widows indeed, desolate? If they become desolate, can the church help them? If they or any of them are non-saints, then the church can help non-saints, and I say we can help those people. That it may relieve them that are widows indeed. 24. What if domestic support for widows fails? Verse 4. Any children or grandchildren, Christian or non-Christian, are to relieve widowed parents. Verse 16. Any woman that believeth, that is a Christian woman, with widows in her family, is to relieve them. Thus, the Christian woman that hath widows is to relieve older widows, Christian or non-Christian, younger widows, Christians, these are not to be enrolled, but they are to marry, and non-Christians. Questions. What if the Christian woman dies? It's supposed to be woman. What if one of these widows becomes a widow indeed? What if that one widow was a non-Christian? Then we can help her. Chart 42H. Unto all. He had a little somewhat to say the other night on 2 Corinthians 9:13. Because in that passage there's a discussion of the contribution being taken up for the poor among the saints of Jerusalem. But then in verse 13 of that passage, you have reference to them and all, unto them and unto all. And he has the boldness to assert that's Christians. It's not. Look at these passages where we have parallel or similar constructions. Acts 5:11, epipontos, the whole church, and upon all that heard these things. That the all are non-Christians there. 1 Thessalonians 3:12. You can write these passages down and cite them later. 1 Thessalonians 3:12, aspontos, abound in love one toward another and toward all men. Is that saints only? 1 Thessalonians 5:15, aspontos, follow after that which is good toward one toward another and toward all. Galatians 6:10, prospontos, work that which is good toward all men and especially toward them that are the household of the faith. You've got prepositions in front of all. 2 Corinthians 9:13, aspontos, your contribution unto them and unto all. And then he says right there in that passage, the all is saints. It's not in the others. It's not saints only in the others. He's just assuming it is there. Unto all, 49a. So we've got Acts 5:11, great fear came on the whole church and all. 6:10, let's do good unto all. 1 Thessalonians 3:12, the Lord make you to increase and abound in love toward one another and toward all. 5:15, but always follow that which is good, one toward another, toward all. And for all the liberality of your contribution unto them and unto all. It wasn't just the church at Jerusalem or the poor among the saints who got the benefit of that contribution. Though it was the focal point of it. Now, 49b, a summary. And look at the bottom of this chart. After all those passages are considered, we don't have any problem. Except what? When Brother Padfield comes down to 2 Corinthians 9:13. No, that's got to be members of the church. Chart 8:24. I do not have time to go through this, but I think this is very explanatory of this whole situation. I hope you can see it. This passage clarifies this situation. Saul was supposed to go to the Gentiles and the children of Israel. Acts 9:15. Jesus said that. Galatians 2:9. Saul is to preach to Gentiles. No Jews mentioned. Remember the poor. James and Cephas and John. The very fact that it's not mentioned that he's to preach to the Jews, but he's just to preach to Gentiles, does not countermand the earlier order. He's to preach to Jews and Gentiles. We're to show mercy toward saint and non-saint. What's later said about saints showing mercy to saints does not countermand the exhaustive scope of the ethic of Christ. Second illustration. The disciples are to love our enemies, pray for them that persecute us, salute brethren and non-brethren. Jesus said that. Now, later on, Romans 15:26, we are to help the poor and the poor among the saints, James, Cephas, and John. They said that to Paul. The very fact that they said, you help the poor, remember the poor hit Jerusalem? That did not mean they could countermand what Jesus had said in Matthew 5. Thank you much.